The wait is over. Football is back in action. That means you can watch your favorite players like Baker Mayfield and Saquon Barkley on Hulu Plus Live TV. Start your free trial today to watch football all season. Get access to over 65 channels and the largest streaming TV library, including exclusive originals and the hottest shows and movies. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Learn more at Hulu.com.
This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The
Score. Oh, damn. We got Billy Donovan as our next coach.
Thanks to everyone who's part of this show today. Layla, thank you, as always, for sitting in on Wednesdays. Look forward to listening both tomorrow and Friday when you'll be sitting with Danny Parkins. Our guests today included Ed Obradovich, Darnell Mayberry, Rick Pitino, and Hub Arkish. Brian Gertsch had the video feed on Twitch. Jay Zawoski, the executive producer. Ray Diaz, the executioner on the board, doing what he does. And on that Twitch feed now, you will see the man who will have you for the next 2 hours on the station on a busy day. He's Lawrence Holmes. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Layla. Good to talk with you both, even though this is going to have to be super quick.
Yep.
We got the man on the line as we speak. So, but I love what you guys did today on the show, being able to kind of do a little bit of everything. And I guarantee you that I'm going to run back some of that Ed Obradovich stuff from earlier. It was touching and warm and the best version of OB.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. You get ready to do a show for the new basketball coach, and then Chicago loses an all-time legend. And we try to make sure that we can not give either short shrift. And we'll finish out the week with plenty of time to do all of it. We've got Ian Happ tomorrow and Kevin Fishbane, Pete Futek, and more. But, Lawrence, without further ado, I guess we should probably get out of your way, shouldn't we?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to kick you out. It's just that the Oracle is on the line, and I want to make sure that I have some time to talk with him because there's some stuff that's been going on.
Two words at the request of every Sox fan who's slid into my DMs or messaged me on wherever, because they all want to talk about Angel Hernandez.
Yeah. Layla, you hit the nail on the head. That is definitely something that I am going to discuss. So I look forward to talking with Layla tomorrow on the other end of this show. And Dan, I will talk to you on... Wait, I don't get to talk to you tomorrow, do I? Anyway, I'm confused because I think there's a Cubs game. But anyway, Friday, we will all get the opportunity to talk to each other yet again. Enjoy the rest of your day. All right, we've got some work to do here, and there is a ton of it for us to do today, and a lot of stuff and a lot of heavy lifting that we have to get done. This hour is being brought to you by Innovative Wellness. Visit InnovativeWell.com. And this segment with Steve Stone is brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook, Chicago's hometown sportsbook. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Steve Stone.
He didn't want to have Harry call him Michael Jackson.
And Lawrence Holmes.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
Color analyst for the White Sox, Steve Stone, joins Lawrence Holmes.
Lawrence, there's something called the arrogance of performance. If you're a performer in whatever it is in your life where you're performing, you have to have the arrogance to perform.
You don't want to use a foreign substance.
No.
So KY jelly made right here in the United States is probably the best thing you can use.
Social media god Steve Stone and Lawrence Holmes, right now on The Score.
You can follow Stoney on Twitter at Steve Stone. He is the Sox color analyst. He is the Score's baseball expert. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new or used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park, or you can go to alpamonteford.com. Stoney, thanks so much for joining me. As per usual, I appreciate it. Here's where I wanted to start with you, because I know that there had to have been times when you felt you were getting squeezed as a pitcher. What's the most effective way to deal with an umpire whose strike zone is, let's say, inconsistent?
Well, I think one of the first things is you can't blame the umpire for the loss last night. I don't think you can ever blame the umpire for a loss. If he had scored more runs, Angel Hernandez is not in the equation. Did he have a good night? No, he had a terrible night. But Angel has been very consistent throughout his career. People don't understand that. He was not good when he came in, and he's not good now. So that's kind of what you're dealing with, and you pretty much know that that's what's going to happen. But because there are so many different excuses in this game of baseball, if you want to, you can just reach up and grab one. But Angel Hernandez did not force Luis Robert to misplay that ball in center field. Luis has one hole defensively in his game, and that is going back to the fence, timing a ball perfectly, and then making the catch. We've seen Kiermaier do it very well in Tampa. We've seen Buxton do it very well. He did it against us in Minnesota. And Luis just doesn't have that part of his game down quite yet. That was a very catchable ball. Looked like it would have been a really good play. It would have been a good play, but it's a play that he has to make. And this, by my estimation, is the fourth time where he hasn't made it. Also, there's another thing. And look, I really believe that Tim Anderson is going to get a lot of votes for the MVP. I think he deserves a lot of votes. I think it's been a remarkable year for him, and I was championing his cause. Jose Abreu has come on. I think maybe Jose has a leg up against him. Don't count out Ramirez because we're seeing what he's doing for the Indians. But Tim cannot get thrown out of that game last night. It's just plain and simple. You cannot get thrown out of a game. I have to stay consistent on this because I was all over Donaldson when he got thrown out of that big game against the Sox for taking a personal agenda. And that was one call against him. This, for Tim, was not a personal agenda. This was built up over the course of the entire game. There's no doubt that Angel had a shifting strike zone, let's say that. But knowing that ahead of time, Tim understands how vitally important he is to this team. I mean, as it turned out, Yolmer made a great play in the last inning. That over-the-shoulder catch was just outstanding. But they need Tim on the field. They don't need Tim thrown out of the game. The irony of the last couple of games, and maybe it shows the stress this team is under, is that they didn't have anybody thrown out of any game all year, and they've had three ejections, Ricky twice and Tim once, in the last couple of games. So they knew the importance of this series. The road trip is now at 1-4. They've allowed Minnesota to not only creep back into it, but Minnesota breathing right down the necks of the Sox for the division title. There's just a half-game difference. It's one game in the loss column. That's the only difference. Minnesota, if they get home field advantage, they're 22-5 at home. That's a really big advantage for them. You don't want to play the Yankees. Yankees are 21-7 at home. You don't want to play them at home. You don't want to play Minnesota at home. Conversely, if, in fact, the destiny of the Sox is Houston, Houston has not been good on the road. Could very well be. I mean, Houston is 8-19 on the road. If the Sox get to play him at Guaranteed Rate Field, that's a big advantage. Oakland has been just fair on the road. They're 13-13, but they clinched the division title, so they'll have a home series. But right now, what the Sox have to do is pretty simple. You put everything out of your mind that's happened because you can't do anything about it. The Sox are 34-21. That's happened. And what they have to do now is win tonight. And they've got a tough challenge. They've got Shane Bieber, but the Indians have Lucas Giolito. And Lucas Giolito has thrown very well against the Indians this year. Bieber has thrown very well against everybody and probably will win the Cy Young Award. One of the guys to keep your eye on tonight is Jose Abreu. He's had three home runs against Bieber during the course of his career. He's red hot. He's coming on late. He's getting some big hits. And that could be the matchup that could turn the tide, assuming that Lucas throws like he does against the Indians.
Steve Stone joining me here on The Score as we talk about the White Sox and what's going on with them. You mentioned Luis Robert. I've been feeling that he needs a day off, but now, like, you have to have his defense in center field in these games that are now becoming crucial. What have pitchers done to him over the last month?
Well, they've done a couple of different things. Number one, if he was just swinging at pitches out of the zone, he would say, okay, somewhere along the line, you're going to have to lay off that slider low and away. It's hard for a young hitter to do that. Aloy was doing that a whole lot last year. And this year, quite obviously, you look at his maturation as a hitter, and you're seeing the kind of hitter that Robert's going to become after he has more time. unfortunately, now you don't have more time. The disturbing thing about Luis is that he's missing hittable pitches in the strike zone. He's missing hanging sliders these days. He's swinging under a lot of fastballs. He's not seeing too many two-seam fastballs. Two-seam fastballs have a different drop ratio than four-seam fastballs. Four-seam fastballs don't really rise. They just give the illusion of rising. That's because you're getting extreme backspin on it. That's why Lucas Giolito strikes out so many guys, because he doesn't throw 99 miles an hour. He throws 93 to 95, but he has so much backspin that the ball has more carry. It stays up longer. Luis was hitting a lot of two-seamers early. He was just crushing every hanging breaking ball in the zone. And then pitchers started to do a few different things with him. Number one, they started jamming him. You see him break a whole lot of bats. That's okay. I mean, hitters to be good hitters have to be able to be jammed on occasion. But one thing that Luis has to do, and I don't think he's doing quite as well because he's a youngster, he's got to give up one part of the plate. Go up there, give up a part of the plate, and look in a certain spot, not necessarily for a certain pitch, because he gets all kinds of pitches like everybody does. But don't try to defend both sides of the plate, because right now they're taking advantage of him, and that's what's going to happen. I mean, a lot of people had the same complaints at times last year about Eloy. Was, boy, how can he keep swinging at those pitches? How come he can't hit this pitch? Well, eventually you learn to hit it. And bear in mind, he's 23 years old. This is his first shot at the major leagues. So I actually have a lot of young players, and a lot of young players will struggle. So I think it's going to work out for him. But right now he's just missing a lot of hittable pitches. And, of course, the requisite amount of sliders in the dirt, things along those lines. But that's kind of a product of youth. But, look, you see Jose swinging the pitches low and out of the zone. You see Tim low and out of the zone. You see Eloy pitches low and out of the zone. However, when they all get their pitch, they don't miss it. And that's the difference. They get the same amount of pitches low and out of the zone on sliders and curveballs, but when they get a mistake, they hit it hard. Luis is missing those same pitches low and away, but he's not hitting the mistakes hard any longer.
One of the things that does give me some real encouragement about the Sox over the last few games, and now we're talking over the last few weeks, is what Eloy has done. And he, very quietly, when you're on a team with a couple of MVP candidates, it might be easy to ignore. But if you look at what he's been doing over the last month or so, it's been incredible to see him continue to mature as a hitter. What things have you seen him doing correctly?
Well, I think what he's doing is really bearing down in two-out situations, because he leads the major leagues in two-out runs batted in. He's among the league leaders in barrels, among the league leaders in hard-hit balls. He's just coming of age. I mean, we knew that he could hit. There was no doubt about that. It was just a question of waiting for everything to start clicking, to understand what the pitchers are trying to do with him, to look for certain pitches in certain places. He's been able to do all of that. But a lot like Jose Abreu has been this year, he will make adjustments with two strikes, and he will, more times than not, drive in some big runs with two strikes. And it's really exciting. Also, one of the things that pretty much goes unlooked at because of the thunder that's represented by Anderson and Abreu and Jimenez is the fact that Nick Madrigal is hitting around 350. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And plus, the most amazing part of what Madrigal has done is hitting with two strikes. He's hitting close to 360. League average is well under 200 when you hit with two strikes. Madrigal has no problem doing that, and he puts the bat on the ball. So he's a perfect complement for a lineup that's going to strike out 10 to 12 times a game. Nick doesn't strike out very much, puts the bat on the ball, certainly in situations like last night. Angle of third, the infield drawn in. Nick hits a hard ground ball, no angles for the infielders, and he drives in a key run. What, to me, looked like it was going to be the winning run, but quite obviously it didn't work out that way. Colome did hurt his back. He got some back spasms, and so that's why they couldn't put him back in. They had every intention of, after having a six-pitch eighth inning, or sixth, ninth inning, to then bring him back to try to finish it off. Probably he would have in the 10th, but as we know, it didn't work out that way. Baseball is wonderfully unpredictable, but you have to put everything behind you and just look at tonight.
Stoney, yesterday, Reynaldo Lopez, I thought, was really good, and he's been good since he came back from Schaumburg.
Yes.
What corrections has he made?
he's throwing a lot of strike ones. I mean, he's not getting behind all that often. And also, he's throwing his straight change and slider combination for strikes now. He wasn't able to do that before. Plus, he was leaving a lot of fastballs. He would look inside to a left-hand hitter and get on the side, get his hands on the side of the baseball, and the ball would then drift over the middle of the plate, and it would get hit really hard. Now, pretty much, he's not doing that. So I think his resurgence is a good one. I don't know quite yet where he's going to fit as this team heads into postseason play, but he will undoubtedly get one more start, you would assume, before it's over. It might start the last game of the season. I mean, look, the Sox would love to win the division. That's number one. Falling short of that, they would love to be able to come in second. Falling short of that, they are going to make the playoffs. And this year, more than any other year, the home field advantage doesn't apply near as much. Now, there's some teams, we talked about the Twins, they're dominating at home, but it's nothing to do with the fan support, because obviously we don't have it. You can only pipe in so much noise. But I think there's very little advantage to hosting the series. The first series is going to be a dangerous series regardless of where you're playing it, because two out of three, you run into two hot pitchers, and every team has a couple. I mean, right now the Sox are lined up to play Cleveland. Right now it's Bieber and Plesac in these two games, tonight and tomorrow. That would probably be the two games you play them in the playoffs. They are fully capable of shutting down any team in baseball. Will they? Who knows? Same thing with the Yankees when the Yankees were struggling. I mean, you would get Cole and Tanaka in a 2 of 3. Obviously, there might not be a third, and the Yankees would probably take out whoever it is. I think they're a very strong team. So that's the danger of the 2 out of 3, and that's where the Sox are going to start it. Like every other team this year, there's no buys. Everybody plays that 2 of 3. It's dangerous for every team. What you're going to see is you're going to see a couple of really good teams lose to teams that they are much better than in those 2 of 3. There's going to be some oddities this year.
I've been trying to figure out what the White Sox should do with Dylan Cease, because in the short series, I know that he has earned a spot on a playoff roster. But in the three-game series, I'm not sure that it makes sense to put him on the roster, because you're probably not going to start him in the do-or-die game. And having him throw out of the pen seems a little bit weird. Like, I could see him in a DS starting a game 3 or a game 4 if you make it that far. But it seems like all of the things that the White Sox have tried to do with Cease, whether it's him going from the wind or him going from the stretch, none of that has taken away the wildness. And the last start was a bad setback in that regard. What steps can be made with him in a bullpen session? Because you don't have a lot of time to figure this stuff out, and you can't send him to the minors or anything like that. So what things can be done in the immediate future for Dylan Cease to try and take some of the wildness out of his game?
Well, I don't think with 5 games left in the season you're going to make major adjustments to anybody. That's number one. Number two, historically, and you can take a look at just about every flamethrower that came into this game, they all were wild very early in their careers. Most of them were able to smooth that out. The great ones do smooth it out. Randy Johnson had no idea where he was throwing the baseball for a few years. There's other guys the same way. Nolan Ryan was a reliever when he came to Major League because he had no idea where he was throwing it. And he couldn't get the curveball over at all. He was a one-pitch pitcher who couldn't throw that pitch consistently for strikes. But they learn. Fireballers come along later than finessers because they never really had to finesse anybody or really learn a great deal of pitchability because they just dominated everybody. They laid over the field. And they would just throw their fastball. They aim for the middle of the plate. The natural movement of the fastball would take it somewhere, and guys would miss it because it's 98, 99 miles an hour. You're going to miss a whole lot of those fastballs. There's not a lot of guys short of maybe double-A baseball that are going to hit that consistently. So I don't worry about him in the long haul. In the short haul, I don't think there's any adjustments that you can make, really. I don't think that he starts the third game because I don't think that you want to trust his control to that big a ball game at this point. So although I think he's going to be a terrific pitcher, I really do, I think that like most fireballers, it's going to come around a little bit later. Right now, I don't even think you can think about him in the bullpen. However, where he might come in handy, and this might be not necessarily in the 2 of 3, but let's think optimistically and think that the Sox get to the 3 of 5. He might be a guy that you put in your bullpen in case you have something happen, an injury or a pitcher that doesn't have his stuff on that given day, Dylan can come in and give you five innings out of the pen. There's not a whole lot of guys can do that. So I think he makes more sense in a 3-of-5 than he does in a 2-of-3. That's not a decision, fortunately, that I have to make. That's a decision that the front office will make in conjunction with Don.